Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Your future lay out there in the bullpen.
This is the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Who let those guys up here?
Well, 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 how the turntables.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Welcome in to the bullpen here at ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I am Joe George. You can find me on Twitter at Joe George Radio. BMAC behind the glass on Twitter at Sacked by BMAC. We got a bunch of stuff again today. The Astros suck against the Oakland A's. They'll be fine tonight, I hope. Fingers crossed. They plan a little bit. We're still going to talk Astros. Josh Beard is going to join us at 6:30 to talk some Texans. And you know, last night's game, before the game, BMAC and I were discussing pretty heavily about, you know, Justin Verlander. Can he bounce back? Who is he going to be? Is he going to be the guy that he was two, three starts ago now at this point, where he felt like he had his best stuff, where he felt like he had turned it around? And then last night happened, and he just wasn't good again. And it was an absolutely, I think disheartening is a fair way to put it, but just disappointing that you are playing a team with 99 losses, and for the second day in a row, you cannot get them to 100. And you have allowed the Texas Rangers and the Mariners to crawl back in with a game and a half back of where you are in the standings. I'm not here to push a panic button and act like the Houston Astros are not going to make the playoffs, or I don't believe that there's a chance the Astros don't win the division. I think all those things are still going to happen. We're going to talk about, in the next segment, what's the key or how the Astros win the World Series in 2023, because I think that's still very much on the table. Like, Max Scherzer out for the year, not going to pitch in the postseason. They can beat the Rangers. We know they can beat the Mariners. The Orioles have never done anything of consequence in the playoffs, especially this young roster. Like, they've done nothing. The Rays, they falter all the time. They accomplish nothing year after year. After having these great regular seasons, the Astros are still the team to beat in the World Series. But at this point, it's just frustrating. I think it's the only way to put it, is that it's frustrating. And honestly, it just doesn't really make sense of why the Astros, like, constantly for the last couple years, have these series where they lose against the Oakland A's. The biggest difference between then and now is that these games matter to you. Like, they matter to a division race in which you're letting the Mariners and the Rangers back in. You're playing the A's, and then you're playing the Royals, and the fact that you're letting these teams gain ground on you is just shocking. And it's just, it makes no sense.
It doesn't make sense, but I and maybe this is just for my own sanity. I keep trying to convince myself that it's no different than last year or any year before during this dynastic run going back to 2017, because I mean, you mentioned it with the Killer Bees, or maybe Jeremy mentioned, or Joel, but either way, the A's swept the Astros last year. The Astros had some bad play or bad series losses last year, and I try not to overreact to, and now we're on two games, but any singular game along those same lines. I mean, obviously they dropped the opener, the Padres series, what was it, 11-2, and then crushed their skulls for the next two games. You have the terrible sweep at home by the Yankees when the Yankees came in and swept you out. And then you go on the road against Texas and you put up 39 runs in three games. So this team, it's baffling to find like a way to attribute or a way to a point or something to point to, like, okay, this is why they are inconsistent, or here's where they're good, here's where they're not, because they are so up and down. They have done this before, as I mentioned, got swept by the A's last year. The one consistent this year has been home and road. And it's going to create a really stupid sports talk radio segment of should the Astros try to have the should not get home field advantage and try to tank to get the sixth seed, that way they're on the road the entire time. And it's a dumb question to ask, but when you look at their splits, they're like not only is their record way better on the road, but they're scoring over a run more per game on the road than they are at home. So it's, I don't know why they don't hit home. The batter's eye thing to me is bunk because they put up a ton of runs against the Padres last Saturday and Sunday. So there was no change in there between the batter's eye between Friday then Saturday and Sunday. But regardless, it's just a completely different team, home and road.
Yeah, look, the batter's eye thing is interesting because they went into a little bit more yesterday. I heard Dana Brown in an interview this morning on the Astros flagship talk about how it's been addressed or it's been brought up by the team. It's pretty clear, like and he referenced it this morning. It's mostly when a tall lefty, is on the mound, like when the players are having the biggest issue with it. Frankly, to me, I just think it's a garbage ass excuse. Like, this team has been good and not had these home issues really over the whole golden era of Astros baseball. And maybe the numbers are different, but to the extreme that it's gone this year, it is so high that they're back to a game above 500, I'm just guessing, at home, because they were one game before the Padres series. So, yeah, they're probably back to a game above 500 at home this year. It's just, it's not good enough. And that's where, I get people want to blame Dusty Baker. The lineup stuff is annoying. Yiner Diaz being in the lineup should happen more consistently. Michael Brantley, Chaz McCormick. Those things, like, we should be done past this era of Mauricio Dubon.
There should never be a time where we log on to the X and find the Astros lineup and it says John Singleton, Jake Myers, 8-9.
100%. But the one thing, and even last night's lineup, like, I get it. Like, people are not happy that Maldi's in there and he's the only guy that can catch Justin Verlander. But the reality is that last night the Astros got six hits. Two of them came from Martin Maldonado. One of them came from Mauricio Dubon. 1-7 last night went 3-24. Like, it's not good enough. Like, that's why the Astros are not winning games. They're not losing games because Dusty Baker is a bad manager. Because I tweeted yesterday that it's just incredible that these teams are back within a game and a half of the Astros because you can't beat the Oakland A's. And one of the first responses I got was that that Dusty Baker can't motivate his guys. It's garbage. These are millionaires that are playing a game. And they can motivate themselves. The division should be the motivation. It's not a motivation issue to why they're not doing well.
I do think there's something there with motivation, but I don't pin that on Dusty. It's not Dusty's. I mean, I guess you could say it's Dusty's job. But look, as you say, these are guys that you think they would want to win, and obviously they do want to win. I'm not trying to say they don't want to win, but that should be the motivation. But I think we talked about this last night. It just feels like this team, when they play on the road against the Rangers, where they play on the road against the Orioles, where they get to go face the Braves earlier in the season, when they swept the Braves on the road, they get up for big series, and then the Orioles come, or not the Orioles, but the Athletics come in town, and they just don't take these series as seriously. Look, it might be as simple as it's a 162 game season, and there's going to be mental letdowns at times, and the mental letdown comes against one of the worst teams in baseball history. I'm not saying that as an excuse, but that might be the reality of what's happening, which gives me hope. Again, if we point to last year, they got swept by the A's last year, and then they flipped the switch and won the World Series. So I do think this is a team, as frustrating as it is and as maddening as it is, because now the division race is much closer than it's ever been during this run, I still think it's a team that I have faith could flip the switch if you can convince me Justin Verlander's not going to be what we saw last night.
And that's really – and that's where, to me, it's – people can pick on Dusty Baker. They can get upset about everything that's going on. But you have Framber Valdez, who's been pretty good. You know, obviously the no-hitter earlier. Like, he was fine on Monday, 10 strikeouts. Wasn't his best stuff, but he pitched well enough for you to win that game. Justin Verlander didn't give you that opportunity. Justin Verlander did not pitch well enough in last night's game to give the Astros a real shot at winning. And then the offense did absolutely nothing. So it is, Jeremy, the way we let off the Killer Bees with, Jeremy, Joel, and myself, was that this is the most frustrating team of the golden era, excluding 2020, throw out that garbage-ass 60-game season. Like, this team is frustrating because they're better than this. We saw it versus the Rangers. We saw it, versus the Red Sox a couple weeks ago. And then to come out flat like this and just be embarrassed consistently is brutal. Now, I get it. The Oakland A's, they're playing okay baseball. They have the best record in the AL West in the last 10 games. They're above 500. Like, they have good young players. Like, this is very Oakland A's baseball, where it feels like they're always the 2015 Astros. They're never the 2017 Astros. Like, they always have guys that are on the rise and surprise you. They just can never win anything of meaning. It doesn't matter. Like, you're better than them. Do your job as baseball players and be good. Like, that's all we're asking. Be good. Be above average. And you would win these games. And that's why, for me, it's so frustrating, because you can't. It's not. I don't think it's Dusty. He annoys me. His lineup drives me insane.
I think it's the inconsistency that with Dusty that drives people crazy. Because I'll just point to an example right here, happening right now in tonight's game. What did Dusty tell us about Hunter Brown and choosing Maldi to catch for him last time around?
If anyone's going to get him right.
If anyone's going to fix him, it's going to be Maldi. Hunter Brown gets hammered, and what do you know? Yonder Diaz is back catching him. Like, if you're telling us Maldi is the only guy that's capable of fixing people, well, one, what the hell's happened with Javier? What the hell's happened with Fromber's inconsistencies? What the hell happened with Verlander last night? But if Maldi is this guy that can actually fix people, and you told us that Hunter Brown's last outing, then why is Yonder Diaz in? And if that's not true, then why isn't Yonder Diaz playing more?
Well, that's one
thing. One of these has to be wrong. Both can't be right at the same time.
That's something Dusty does do that it does annoy me. Like, the biggest thing Dusty Baker annoys me about is he says things, and then they're oftentimes a walking contradiction. The one I always go back to is when, you know, Yonder Diaz was catching Christian Javier early on, and then they changed it to Maldonado. I think it was that. Or maybe it was even, like, it might have been Hunter Brown. Like, well, it's been so many.
Yeah. Yonder did catch Hunter Brown's, like, first 7-8 starts.
Yeah,
the season.
And his reasoning behind it was, well, what if Yiner gets hurt? And that reasoning is sound and it's logical, but then that sound logic never applies to why only Martin Maldonado catches Justin Verlander and Framber Valdez. Because what you're telling me is that no matter how good Yiner Diaz is catching or playing or hitting, that when the postseason gets here, I don't want him behind the plate. He cannot catch Justin Verlander and Framber Valdez for the first time in game 1 and 2 of the ALDS. And he should be in the lineup, and he won't be. And it's why, like, I've given up hope on the Martin Maldonado thing.
Yeah, because he tells you, well, we can't catch him every time because we need to get these pitchers' exposures with different guys in case they get hurt. But then Maldi is with Fromber and Verlander every single time.
Yeah.
What if Maldi gets hurt? There's no consistency with the rhetoric he spits out sometimes.
I'm still convinced that if Martin Maldonado got hurt, Yiner Diaz would not catch Justin Verlander or Framber Valdez, and they would bring up Caesar Salad.
Okay, all right, we're going to break. Up here on the bullpen. But like that,
I'm so convinced, like, that's what would actually happen, just because it seems like he despises the idea of them catching. But we will get into... Look, I said this at the beginning. I believe the Astros are still going to go to the World Series this year. That, you know, when you look at the Fangraphs odds of most likely go to the World Series, the betting odds, wherever you look at, they're always number one or number two in the American League, even as they were chasing the Rangers throughout most of the season. Their odds have always been up there that they were going to get there. And I still believe, but do you believe that the Astros can get back to the World Series right now? We're coming off 2 games, losing to the Oakland A's. And if they do, fill in the blank. The Astros get back to the World Series if what happens? We'll do that next year on the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Dude.
Have you paid your dues, Jack? Yes, sir. The check is in the mail.
Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Back here on the bullpen on ESPN 97.5, 92.5. Joe George here with you until 7 o'clock. You can find me on Twitter at Joe George Radio. You can weigh in at 713-780-3776 on the call-in line and the text line. We'll have Josh Beard from Josh and the Who joining us in about 13 minutes from now to talk about the Texans, kind of what we're looking for into week two. Anthony Richardson, for those wondering, was not on the injury report for the Indianapolis Colts today, which I think wasn't too surprising because it seemed like he just banged up. Like, it wasn't like a real injury. Jalen Petrie, however, was in full sweats, sitting on a chair on the sideline.
I think we talked about that on Monday, but he's not playing.
Yeah, he's absolutely not playing.
And I just hope you don't call him soft. I know you're prone to call guys soft.
No,
and
they're
not
gonna play. No.
I don't know.
That's slander.
If I remember the conversation on Monday, you were a little like, I don't know. I think you should play.
I mean, I kind of was hopeful he'll play, okay. But like, I don't. All think right. I'm not gonna call him soft. He's not Lance McCullers. Like, come on, man. Like, I don't believe that. Like Jalen Petrie's coughing up blood. Like, this is like almost Tyrod Taylor. Like, Tyrod Taylor's not soft because he got stabbed in the lung and didn't play and lost his job in L.A. and
San Diego. I agree. I'm glad to hear you say it.
Yeah, no.
I thought I started to get the impression on Monday you thought Petrie was soft a little bit.
No. I guess I'll have to ask Jeremy that question on Friday if he thinks Jalen Petrie. He better say no. He better say no, or he's going to have to end up on Bad Take Boulevard. All right, so here's the question. For this segment, before we get to Josh Beard and talk some Texans at 6:30, the Astros get back to the World Series. And I didn't say win, just back to the World Series, and it will be because of what?
Either Hunter Brown or Javier figure it out.
I think that's a very good answer.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be both. Like, you don't need. I mean, it would be great if they did, but you don't need three good starters to get to the World Series or even win it. I mean, I'll just flash back to the first time the Astros won the World Series in 2017. They were kind of duct taping it together with the Charlie Morton, Lance McCullers piggybacks in both Game 7 against the Yankees and the Astros. They weren't rocking with four starters they wanted going the whole game, every game. And part of that was because of bullpen issues, but point being, like, if Verlander and Fromber are who we hope they are, and then either Brown or Javier figure it out, then I have a lot of confidence in combination with this offense we've seen second half of the season that they could definitely get to the World Series. Because my confidence in the Astros as it is my lack of confidence in the rest of the American League. Because I believe. The Braves are world killers. Like, I think the rest of the league is probably playing for second place at this point.
You know what's funny? I tend to agree with you.
Yeah, Braves are. Yeah, yeah. Because the Dodgers last year had the best record in the league, and they got bounced in the first round.
So 2019.
Yeah.
Like, 100%. It's the weirdest thing in baseball where, like, there is not, the best team in the league, it's like it's the one sport where it feels like they consistently fail.
It just takes one injury, too.
Yeah, and so I think the answer...
I mean, the Braves are great, but their starting pitching depth, if they had one injury hit it, they'd be in trouble. But yeah, I mean, I don't really believe in the A's. I mean, not the A's, sorry. I don't believe in the Rays. I mean, the Orioles are still so young. This will be basically almost everybody on that roster will be their first playoff trip. And obviously the Astros have proven the ability to beat the guys in the West. I mean, obviously Seattle may be withstanding, but yeah, I just don't believe the rest of the American League is up to the Astros level, assuming, as I said, Hunter Brown or Javier figure it out.
Yeah, so for me, it's the Astros can get back to the World Series or win the World Series if the starting pitching on average gives up less than four runs a game.
That's not because you would think that would not be a big ask.
It's
kind of piggybacking what I was saying, but
like it's if the starting pitching can keep the other team relatively in check, I think the offense on a consistent basis in the playoffs will be good enough. And look, we just talked in the last segment how the Astros lineup yesterday playing the lowly A's were a complete disaster, and they couldn't get it done. They couldn't muster up a ton of runs. But we know what this team is fully capable of and when they're really rolling on offense. And I think that's going to be the key to the Astros winning the World Series in 2023 and just even getting there, getting back to the ALCS for what is it, like the seventh or eighth straight time. I can't even keep track.
Seven.
It's the offense is going to have to be the side of the team that really carries the Astros because, look, it's a fun idea to believe in Justin Verlander, but at this point, he's shown us nothing. Like, there was people, I saw it in the Twitch and the text line earlier today, they were starting to talk about being just an all-time bad trade already. You know, Drew Gilbert's crushing it. He's hitting .320. He's hit six home runs in the minors since he's got traded to the Mets organization.
See, I almost don't even care what what happens with Verlander this year to call it a bad trade. Now, Gilbert can make it a bad trade, but you weren't going to use Gilbert in this postseason. You probably weren't going to use Gilbert in the next year's postseason. So the only person of the two that would actually impact this year's team, and obviously there was every reason in the world for the Astros to make a move to impact this year's team, was Verlander. It wasn't going to be Drew Gilbert.
Yeah, and that's totally fair, but people are frustrated because when you trade away your top two prospects, you expect greater return.
We're not talking with an angel situation where you trade away your top prospects. And then you're done 2 weeks later. I mean, Altuve recently, you talked about it yesterday, about he's talking about his contract status. He's got 2 years left on his deal. Bregman's got 2 years. Fromber, Tucker, about the same thing. This Astros dynasty, as of now, their window is this year and the next two. Most likely, he's not going to help you in that time, in that window. Verlander will. So yeah. I don't have any problem with the deal.
For sure. But the Astros, and we got one text here from 5482, the Astros will get back to the World Series if Justin Verlander is good. I think that's a very good answer because they need him to be better. Like, they don't need him to be the Cy Young winner. But what has happened in his last two starts, It's gonna stop the Astros from getting to the World Series. Because even though it's great that he went seven yesterday, that's not gonna happen in the playoffs. Like, in the playoffs, Dusty Baker,
he would have gotten pulled.
He would have got pulled way earlier. And that's where, you know, the bullpen can be a strength. We talked the other day on the Killer Bees about, you know, what is your plan for the fourth starter? And it's kind of like, just get to like the fourth inning, get to the fifth inning between two guys. And we kind of talked about this as well on Monday, BMAC, of like Hunter Brown and Javier, just somehow get you to the fifth inning two times through the order each. And then you go to the bullpen because your bullpen is a strength. But if Justin Verlander can't go deep into games, these guys are already heavily taxed. And then you're going to ask him to pick up the Verlander slack, the JP France slack, the Javier Hunter Brown, whichever one's left in the rotation at that point. Because I will say, you know, the way Javier and Hunter Brown are going, it just continues to be clear, like, J.P. France is going to be the guy that's going to get the ball in Game 3.
I want to believe that, but I don't think Dusty will. I mean, Dusty has shown a commitment to his veterans time and time and time again. And if that remains true with what we've seen, the pattern of decision-making from Dusty Baker, that guy's going to be Christian Javier. But as you were reading me that text from the listener, it made me think of this question for you, Joe. I'm curious what you think about it. He mentioned that you have to get Verlander. Like, that's the thing you have to get going. But really, you could have that same thing. You could say the same thing about Fromber. You could say the same thing about France because he's had a few hiccups over the last month. You could say the same thing, obviously, about Hunter Brown and Javier. So let me throw this question at you. Pick one of the five Astros starters to get prime, the best of the best of their stuff, and the rest you're going to have to gamble with whatever happens. Which guy are you taking? If I get his best, I'm willing to gamble on the rest of them.
Christian Javier. Because Christian Javier showed last year in the World Series that when he's on his A game, he is absolutely, can be a dominant pitcher.
You could say unhittable because he literally threw a no-hitter.
Absolutely. So I would say the answer for me, it's Christian Javier. That, you know, I trust Fromber and Justin Verlander. Like, even if I can't guarantee that they're going to have their best stuff, there's a better chance that they're going to give it to me at this point than Christian Javier. So if I had to pick one, it's him. Because
I think that's the right answer. Yeah, I agree.
I mean, because even like, I still don't even know if we know what Hunter Brown's best stuff is. I think we do. Like, we see it in spurts.
His best stuff has been at AAA this point. He had two starts at the end of last season where I think both games he went six innings, one earned run. But it was two starts.
Yeah.
And then he was in the bullpen in the postseason. So, yeah, I think you're right. We don't know what Hunter Brown's best stuff is because really, you know, the bulk of it, except for two starts in his career, has come in the minor leagues.
Yeah, and even then, like, his best stuff seems pretty unhittable. J.P. France's best stuff, while that changeup can be nasty, like, it's just not the same as the best stuff of Christian Javier. Like, they're not even close to that guy. Before we get to Josh Beard in the next segment, who you'll be able to find on Twitter at Josh Beard Radio, I don't really know what this tweet means. Well, I mean, I guess I know what it means, but I don't really understand how any of these conversations are possible right now. Okay. I cannot imagine being an NBA general manager and picking up the phone from Rafael Stone and being like, hey, you want KPJ? Because apparently, per Shams Charania, the Rockets are working to trade Kevin Porter Jr. along with draft compensation. So they're going to dump out
pulling a Brock Osweiler. Stapling a draft pick to his forehead and kicking him out of town.
Except Brock was just – he just sucked.
KBJ wasn't a criminal.
It appears. So apparently the Rockets – I think there's about a 0% chance this happens. I cannot imagine there is a team in the NBA – that would acquire Kevin Porter Jr. unless you attach
so
multiple
What is the status of these talks according to what you're reading?
He says
their conversations.
Yes. He says Rockets working to trade Kevin Porter Jr. after assault strangulation charges. It does seem at this point like, you know, the Rockets, they can't suspend him. They can't waive him.
Yeah, because it's not, yeah, it's the offseason.
That's what's odd to me is that how could you trade him if you can't waive him? So that's why I guess I'm a little confused about this report. It doesn't make sense, but like I just can't imagine being like a general manager of like the Charlotte Hornets and being like, yeah, we'll take your trash if like even though you're throwing a first round pick. And like also if I'm Rafael Stone, I'm not giving up a first round pick like when I can just cut this clown in a month. Because even if he's proven innocent somehow, like he doesn't need to be on this team. He didn't need to be on this team last year. He never should have been re-signed. Like the headache that is Kevin Porter Jr., been there, done that, over it. Like we all know what it is. He never should have been here. But it's just what a weird, what an odd timing for that story to come out. Cause there was not been on my Kevin Porter Jr. bingo card for where we're at in the Rockets offseason. But coming up next, let's get into some Texans. Josh Beard, new host of Josh and the Hoop from 12 to 3. He joins me next year on the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We're your daddy.
Well, I feel like I'm your daddy.
You're not my daddy.
No,
daddy.
No, I'm your daddy.
You ain't my daddy, boy.
Yes, I am.
No, you are not our daddy.
I am your daddy.
Not a daddy.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, you're back inside the bullpen with the producers from ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Wait. Who let those guys up here? Security! That's them right there. Right there.
Joe George here with you on the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We're with you most nights now from 6 to 7. We won't be tomorrow. Tomorrow we will debut a new show on the station called Game On, a college football show with Barry Laminack and Jerome Solomon. So those guys will be on tomorrow at 6. And then I'll be back on Friday at 6 o'clock. But right now, let's go out to the phone line, bring in Josh Beard, find him on Twitter at Josh Beard Radio, new host of Josh and the Who for a couple more weeks. You're not getting fired, Josh. I'm just teasing, doing a tease there. So Noah Brown goes on the IR today. I guess he got hurt in the game. I wasn't even aware that happened, but D'Amico's strategy seems to be wait till Wednesday to drop all the injury bombs on us. So Noah Brown out this weekend versus the Indianapolis Colts, and for a couple weeks after that. Do you feel like it's Tank Dell season now, and he's going to be everything we hoped already in week two?
I don't know about everything that we hoped, which, by the way, I have Starfield pause, so you got 10 minutes, buddy. Thanks very much. You're really cutting into my video game time here, but I'm happy to come on. I don't know that if Tank Dell is going to give us exactly what we want yet, but if he can take over some of those snaps that Noah Brown got in week one, because I think Noah Brown had like 56, 57 snaps, and Tank Dell only had in the 30s, like 34, 35, somewhere around there. If he gets that uptick by the 20 more snaps, I'd have to guess he gets a couple more touches. Maybe he can actually do something. And like, I am in no way comparing these two players, but I'm also kind of comparing them. I'd be interested to see with that kind of snap count if we get some, at least, version of production out of Tank Dell from what we saw with the Ravens and Zay Flowers. Now, Zay Flowers clearly was one of the most talented receivers in this last draft. He was wide receiver 3, maybe should have been above Quentin Johnston as wide receiver 2. We don't know yet. But he looked incredible in week 1 against the Texans defense, and Tank Dell's in that same vein of player. It's get the ball in his hands, see what he can do. So if Noah Brown going on the IR means we get an uptick of 20 extra snaps, 25 extra snaps from Tank Dell, and that gets split across this very shallow receiver pool, I'm interested to see what kind of production we're going to get out of him.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because he should get the ball way more than he has. Like, he showed in preseason. We knew in college, like, how much of a high-volume guy he could be, and the idea of Tank Dell just being a punt returner for the Texans just felt like a mistake. And I was really hopeful that'd be like by week six, week seven, he would rise through the depth chart. But it also, you know, John Metchie today met with the media. He didn't rule out, you know, coming back soon. I have low expectations for him, but do you feel like we should have any expectations for John Metchie this season, or everything that we potentially get is just like bonus money from whatever he is?
Absolutely the latter. Like, I have zero expectations for him in 2023. If he gets out there and he plays in some games and maybe at some point gives you some production, that's house money, right? Like, we're playing with that. That's the cherry on top of, well, I don't really want to call it a wide receiver Sunday because it'd be one of the more disgusting Sundays I've ever had. But it would be that cherry on top, I guess, of what we're getting from wide receiver production. Because there should be no expectations on John Metchie. And not in a bad way. Not in a, hey, he doesn't have the talent or he's not a guy that can do it. It's just situationally and the context surrounding John Metchie, nobody in their right mind should expect a lot from him. And if he can get on the field and he can give you production, then I would be ecstatic with that. And we've seen what he did at Alabama. We know that the talent is there if he can get back and get right. And maybe there will be opportunity for him there. Who knows? But anything he gives us this season, if I get to watch John Metchie on a Sunday at some point and he runs a couple of routes and he has a couple of catches, that's totally fine with me. But no expectations more than that.
All right, one big topic, Josh. Josh Beard with me here on the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Find him on Twitter at Josh Beard Radio. One big thing that's been a discussion of point on the Killer Bees this week has been, you know, when can you compare C.J. Stroud to other quarterbacks in the NFL, you know, versus where just the rookies or first-year starters. But today the 33rd team put out a power rankings of their quarterbacks in the NFL. I don't know if you saw this, but they have C.J. Stroud after just 1 week, going into week two, C.J. Stroud listed as the 24th best quarterback in the NFL, higher than both Bryce Young and Anthony Richardson, but also higher than Deshaun Watson. Does 24 sound about right already for CJ? Like, that's a pretty good start, I feel like, for a rookie quarterback to where at least where some people view him.
Yeah, we actually talked about that on Monday on Josh of the Who, whenever we had Patrick Creighton, who's going to be doing late hits in a little bit, from 8 to 10. But we had him on Monday, and we talked about, like, hey, who did CJ Stroud play better than? Actually, sorry, it wasn't Monday. It was yesterday. I'm getting my days mixed up. It was yesterday. Who did C.J. Stroud play better than in week one, talking about all the quarterbacks? And so I left the other rookie quarterbacks out of it, meaning Bryce Young and Anthony Richardson, because I'd still put them all kind of on the same tier. It's like, young guys, see what you have. But, I mean, if you're putting them up against the likes of Joshua Dobbs and Sam Howell and Kenny Pickett, and you could throw names out there like Jimmy Garoppolo. You can throw some of these other more veteran names into the mix. Like Geno Smith is CJ. Did we see enough from Geno Smith in week one to say he is the better? Or sorry, from CJ Stroud to say he is the better quarterback than Geno Smith? Like I would put them near each other. I'd probably put CJ Stroud talent wise a little bit above him, but like, it's absolutely fair to compare him to other quarterbacks in the NFL right now. Like, I don't care that he's a rookie. He's in the NFL. He played his first week of action. He looked pretty good. Like, I think he's in the top 10 in passing yards after week one. He was a top 8 quarterback from an efficiency standpoint in week one. Yeah, we can absolutely compare him to the other. But here's the thing. The people who don't want to compare him to other quarterbacks in the NFL are the people who don't realize how well he actually did across the board compared to other quarterbacks in the NFL. Like, if we're looking at what C.J. Stroud did in the Texans' loss to the Ravens versus what Dak Prescott did in the Cowboys' win against the Giants, people would look at that and say, okay, the Cowboys won 40-0. Clearly, Dak did better. No, C.J. Stroud was the better quarterback in the Texans' loss to the Ravens than Dak was in a win against the Giants. So it's all comparative, and it's all you have to take it within context, and we're going to go week by week with all this. But 24 is about right. I think he's somewhere in that, like, that lower 20s number. I think I had him at 22 or 23, so I was only like one or two spots off from where he was ranked in that ranking. So 24 feels around the right area, and if we start to get, if Mike Boone doesn't drop an easy touchdown on a screen pass, maybe we think even better of C.J. Stroud this week. He actually has a touchdown added on to his 242 yards and no interceptions. So I have no problem comparing him to other NFL quarterbacks. And 24, to me, is his floor, and it's only up from there as long as we keep seeing these improvements.
Yeah, I agree. I think 24 is pretty reasonable right now. It's funny looking at the list, though, and like trying to be excited about C.J. Stroud when they have Kenny Pickett ranked higher than him. I'm like, what are we doing here? Like, they had Kenny Pickett ahead of Brock Purdy. I'm like, stop. Like, frankly, like, C.J. Stroud should have been in front of Justin Fields. Like, he was clearly, I think, the better quarterback on Sunday than a lot of these guys in the NFL that we saw. But, you know, going into week two, I am going to predict the Colts to lose this game, the Texans to get the victory in week two to move to 1-1 on the season. I think C.J. Stroud will definitely find the end zone at least one time, if not two times this week. I do not think a lot of the Indianapolis Colts, when I predict the Texans to win seven games, a lot of that's because of just who they're playing. And I think everything I had hoped for the Texans defense with D'Amico Ryans in charge and Will Anderson on that side of the ball, I think we got a good taste of that this weekend. So I know it's Wednesday. I know it might be a little early predictions for you, Josh, but I'm going to put you on the spot here. The Texans, will they move to 1-1 on Sunday over the Indianapolis Colts?
I already had somebody ask me this today, and I was put on the spot, had to think about it for a second. And I do think that we see improvements from C.J. Stroud. I think we see improvements from the receivers. I think we see improvements on the defense. And to me, most importantly, I think we see improvements from Bobby Slowick from a play-calling standpoint, and even from D'Amico Ryans from a defensive play-calling standpoint and decision-making as a head coach. I love the aggression that he showed. Keep doing that. That being said, Texans go 0-2. I think the Colts win 21-17.
Why?
I think it's going to be a close game. That Colts defense looked good against the Jaguars. They look good, and the Jaguars actually have a passable NFL offensive line, and the Texans don't have that right now. Although I do think they should kick the tires on Lyle Collins and see what might be there.
I think so, too.
Him getting dropped by the Bengals, I think what does it hurt? It hurts nothing. I think this is an emotional hedge for me, predicting that the Colts win 21-17, where it's like, if the Texans do win, I get double happy because they won and I wasn't expecting it to happen. But I think that the Colts and Anthony Richardson showed me enough that by and large, top to bottom of that roster is just more talented than what the Texans roster is right now.
Yeah, all that's fair for sure. I'm not a believer that part of it for me, Josh, is I'm so anti Anthony Richardson. I'm not even like, I think Joel always says he's like 2 years away from being 2 years away. I just think he's like Trey Lance. Like, I don't think he's ever really going to be that good in the NFL. I guess he's better than Trey Lance already by default because of one game, but I'm not a believer that he's consistently going to be good and he's going to cost his team games because of the mistakes he makes.
That is called Justin Fields trauma, and I think that's something that you need to deal with and you need to work through.
I've made it pretty clear.
Clearly, there's some hurt feelings.
I've made it pretty clear over the last 3 days, Josh, that I think C.J. Stroud's a better quarterback than Justin Fields.
I don't think you're wrong. I mean, when we talk about quarterback position, not playmaker, when we talk about quarterback, a guy who's going to throw the ball and lead a team, I think I would tend to agree with that.
Yeah, Justin also has a moron for an offensive play caller, so I'm kind of hopeful Bobby Slowick's not going to be that guy because I wasn't super impressed with his first game. But, you know, look, it's one game for him, too. Will Anderson's going to dominate. So, well, I'm curious to see how this game goes this week. It's a big game, for sure, no doubt. Like, I think this is a moment where I think you're going to upset a lot of Texans fans if you're D'Amico Ryans and the team if you don't get a victory. I think most people are expecting a W this weekend. Do you think that's fair as well, that fans are expecting that win?
Oh, yeah. Look, I mean, this entire fan base, everything that everybody should be thinking about right now, all of us, everybody who covers the team, everybody who thinks about the team, we shouldn't be thinking about success. We should be hoping for success. That's what a rebuild's all about. It's hoping to see improvements. It's hoping to see both the talent, the young talent, the young players, and the young coaches get better and improve week in and week out. That's what we want to see. And so, yes, I think it's totally fair for everybody, maybe not to be like, we get a win or we suck. It's more of a, man, we should get a win here. They're also a team that's rebuilding. We think we're better. This could be great. That's what we should have every single week within that realistic scope of, okay, this week they're playing a team that's a playoff contender, a team that's a Super Bowl contender. Maybe it's not going to happen against the Jags the way we think, but next week we've got the Titans, so there's a chance we can win that game.
All right, here's Josh Beard. You can find him on Twitter at Josh Beard Radio. Josh, have you guys announced who's your co-host tomorrow, or is it a surprise?
No, I tease, it's a surprise. I tease that there may be another JB on the show tomorrow.
Yeah, maybe once upon a time, the three of us did a show together called The Bull Rush on another station at night. All right, man. Well, it's good to talk to you. Obviously, we're excited to have you being part of the team here, and look forward to the show tomorrow, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. I'm going to go back to video games. Bye, Joe.
Or watch the Astros game, because apparently John Singleton just
both.
Did something.
I'll do both.
All right, bye, Josh. All right, here's Josh Beard. You can find him on Twitter, at Josh Beard Radio. Yep, it sure seems like everyone's pissed at Dusty Baker already for having John Singleton in the lineup tonight. But coming up next, I love lists. BMAC sent me one today. It's kind of complicated, but it's basically like, who are the most underpaid players in the NFL? And there was a stunning player left off the list for the Houston Astros. We can do it next year on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Dude.
I'd be most worried about seeing my seminal vesicles.
Or like the Florida State seminal vesicles?
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's The Bullpen. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Final segment of The Bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I'm Joe George. You can find me on Twitter at Joe George Radio. Thank you again to Josh Beard for joining the show. You can find on Twitter at Josh Beard Radio. So BMAC sent me this list today. It was ranking MLB's 20 best veteran bargains. Which players most outperform their pay? And he said right away, he's like, I got a problem with this list. It's like, okay. And he told me what it was. And then I went through the list, Brian.
Yeah.
And
did you agree with me? I'll let you run through your
thought
process.
Let's start here. I don't know really how they judge this, because number 17 on the list is Shohei Ohtani. If Shohei Ohtani's not number one on your list is stupid.
Right, yeah, he's definitely a value, but, I mean, there's got to be, the idea of value has to be, because they post both of these numbers. They post their WAR, and they post their salary. So, to me, that clearly tells me that they're producing at a WAR level that is way further, or way better than the that number would suggest they should get paid for it.
Yeah, now
that's the idea of this list.
Now, some of these I agree.
And Ohtani would fit that, because he could make easily $60 million what he's doing.
Yes. Now, like, number one, bias, not gonna deny.
The Cub.
Justin Steele.
He's been a bargain. He's been a bargain.
As like he's the number two betting favorite in the National League right now to win the Cy Young. So the fact that he makes less than $1 million and he has a 4.5 WAR or 4.4 WAR, and he's probably going to finish top three in the Cy Young this year, like, that's very fair. Adolis Garcia, very good, makes less than $1 million. But, like, I don't care. Anyone else on this list, like, Shohei Ohtani should still be number one. So, like, that's my first beef. And then the second one is the same as yours. That Kyle Tucker's not on the list.
Yeah, Kyle Tucker not being, you know, let's just start with number 20, you know. And look, I'm not saying Pete Alonso's a bad player, but his WAR is a full point lower than Kyle Tucker's. He has a 3.3 WAR. Kyle Tucker has a 4.3 WAR. But, oh, Pete Alonso makes three times the amount of money that Kyle Tucker does.
Yeah.
And Kyle Tucker makes $5 million. Pete Alonso makes 14.5. Pete Alonso is a value. Like, Pete Alonso hitting 40 home runs or whatever he ends up with the season at 14.5 is a value. Guys that hit 40 home runs make, you know, upwards of 30. But it's not the same value that Kyle Tucker is. Especially when you factor in he asked for 7 and got screwed with the Astros winning the arbitration case and sending him back down to $5 million. I mean, how many guys are going to flirt with 300 in like a 25-25 season at $5 million?
Well, and he's probably going to get to 30-30.
He might get to 30-30.
So he's at, I think he's at 26-28 right now, 26 home runs, 28 stolen
something
bases.
Something like that. At least a 25-25 season.
Yeah, he's got 104 RBIs. Like, he's going to finish, I think,
probably top three in RBI.
I think he'll finish second in MVP voting in the American League.
Behind Shohei. You think Shohei still gets it?
Well, I tried to say Kyle Tucker should win it now, and Joel and Jeremy looked at me like I was the dumbest person on the planet.
How much time does a guy have to miss where you take him off?
I don't. He's played so much this season that it is hard for me to take him off. I think that's really unfair to Shohei. He's played.
It's just the combination 90%? With the bad team and missing time. If Ohtani still wins it, I would have no problem with that. I will not write an article bashing here's my article why he was the wrong choice. But I could make a case for why you shouldn't give it to him. You miss a month and a half of the season, plus your team is going to win 71 games. I think there's a case for why you shouldn't get MVP at that point.
Yeah, and you're on a team they trade all these players away, and then you miss the playoffs.
Yeah, and you were healthy at that time.
Yeah, I've always I am a firm believer, and Mike Trout has won the MVP award, of course, multiple times.
Four times.
Shohei has won the MVP award. At some point, I don't believe that you should be on a losing team.
This goes back to when A-Rod went to the Rangers. He was winning MVPs there, and the Rangers were winning 60 games every year.
And I get it. Without him, I've always been on a bad team. The Oakland A's right now are about to be a 99 loss team.
Right.
If you add Shohei Ohtani to the Oakland A's, maybe they're a 90 loss team. They're still one of the worst teams in all of baseball. If you took Shohei off the team, off the Angels, they're 68-79. He played zero games this season. They're 58-89? Is it really that much of a difference?
It's a simple question. You look at the teams that are making the playoffs and ask yourself, if we took X player off of a team, who would be the most devastating injury to lose? If you took Acuna off the Braves, he's obviously the most impactful player you could lose off that Braves roster. And for the Astros, there's the problem, I think, maybe with Tucker is you can make the conversation that he might only be the third most important player as far as losing to an injury behind Altuve and Yordan.
That's
not even factoring in Verlander and Fromber.
Well, after Jose Altuve had his three home run game, I think his WAR for the season was a 3.9 and Tucker was a 4.2
already.
And I'm weird with MVP votes. Okay, if people would absolutely hate me if I had an MVP vote, because I would vote for Jose Altuve. Because since Jose Altuve came back, the Astros had one of the best offenses in Major League Baseball.
It does really, it coincides.
Chased down the number one spot in the AL West. When you're talking about most valuable player, you can see it with your eyeballs. Jose Altuve on the field, Astros versus off the field, they're a completely different team. And I kind of wish we viewed things that way you can make argument. I think one of the funniest arguments and dumbest things at the same time I've ever heard is that Peyton Manning should have got MVP votes when the Colts went 0-16 because it's he was so damn good and you took Peyton Manning off the team and they didn't win a single game. Gave him an MVP vote and he didn't play a single. That is the definition of most valuable player is Peyton Manning. Real quick, just because we'll not have a show tomorrow. Like I said, it'll be Game On with Jerome Solomon and Barry Laminack tomorrow at 6, our new college football show that we're debuting on the station. And you'll hear Barry from 3 to 6 with Joel Blank.
And me.
And BMAC, because I'm off tomorrow, too.
Slacker.
I know. I can't take days off. I only work 8 days a week. Minnesota Vikings versus Philadelphia Eagles tomorrow night. I think the Vikings are going to get trounced.
We don't have enough time to really dig into this.
I know. I just want to throw in a little hot take that the Vikings are going to get smoked tomorrow.
So you take nothing from the fact that Mac Jones was able to go for 300 plus and 3 scores through the air? That means
maybe
nothing?
Maybe a little bit.
I know we had this problem in our Dynasty League where we allowed people to bet on player props to either win or lose Fab.
Yeah, I don't have time for that.
You're not falling for that? But no. Today, this week's prop was on Kirk Cousins simply because, Kirk Cousins' history on Thursday night in primetime is horrid.
It's so bad.
But you look, Mac Jones last week, I would say Kirk Cousins' greater sign, Mac Jones, and Mac Jones just threw for 300 plus and 3 scores. So I do think there's something there. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe it was just a week one not ready to play. But if the Eagles' defense has taken a step back, then, Justin Jefferson, Kirk Cousins, I think they could keep it a competitive game. I would never pick them to win, but I think they could keep it competitive.
All right, that's Brian McDonald. You can find him on Twitter at SackedByBMAC. I am Joe George. You can find me on Twitter at Joe George Radio. I will be back on Friday with the Killer Bees at 3, and we'll be back for the bullpen, another 6 o'clock edition on Friday as well. Coming up next, should be interesting today. Coming off a loss to the University of Miami, the Jimbo Fisher show. I think I'm going to listen to that one. I normally have an anti-coaches show in terms of like being part of the listening audience. I always kind of like them when they lose. I feel like it's a little feisty. So Jimbo Fisher show, that's next. After that, Late Hits with Patrick Creighton. I'll talk to you tomorrow. I'll talk to you Friday at 3 o'clock with the Killer Bees. See ya.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to aero hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.